meters is about 6 seconds of free fall, which is enough to save everyone. Even if I couldn't fly, I could glide or slowly fall, considering how overloaded I was. Why not? You cannot carry two players on you. Ignoring the notification, I looked on in horror as my paws simply passed through Stacy as if she were made of air. I could neither latch on to her nor slow her horrible fall.
Dan, it's okay. I'll just cast a bubble. Don't panic.
The girl's thought flooded my mind with relief, allowing me to take a breath. I was about to toss Plinto off me.
Thanks for grabbing Plinto. Land next to me.
The body of the one you love, even if only its virtual representation, slamming into a crowd of NPCs fighting some phantoms, is quite a sight, especially when it strikes them like a bowling ball, scattering the phantoms in every direction. Earth went flying upward, as did NPCs and phantoms. Hanastaria arrived in style.
Get over here! Dan, you're casting strengthening. Get into the crowd of NPCs. Try to find the one we need to give our security passes to.
Plinto, you go to Stacy. I passed on her request. Though, who am I kidding? Her order to the rogue.
I'll be nearby.
Roger that!
Came the rogue's response from somewhere in the vicinity of my tail, and in a tone of voice that caused most players in Malabar to pull muscles. The rogue had entered his battle mode, and it was best to stay out of his way. Considering that all of Plinto and Anastaria's stats had grown by 45%, you could say that two monsters had descended from the heavens to Altamita's gates, and one, well, not quite monster, whose only goal at the moment was simply to survive. Me, that is.
I don't know who you are,
an attractive 300-level NPC said to me. A mage, if I surmised accurately from the lightning flashing from her hands.
But you've arrived just in the nick of time. Tell your warriors that we're about to retreat. It's not possible to make it inside at the moment. We need to conserve our manpower. Retreat!
Came the order, and 30 fully armored warriors commenced a fairly fluid, as if they had drilled it for years, retreat. 5 healers put on a master class in healing, maintaining the hit points of all the fighters at 90% to 100%, while 3 mages, including the girl I'd been talking to, who seemed also to be their leader, did their best to exterminate the phantoms as they approached the warriors. Even if they didn't have much of an effect, the enemies that reached the plated warriors were significantly reduced in life. It occurred to me that I should try to recruit this squad of mercenaries. What if it worked out? Who knew?
Stacy, we're retreating!
I'm finding our ability to communicate with one another nicer and nicer. In the heat of battle, there's no time to read the chat or listen to the amulet, and a person is incapable of ever ignoring their own thoughts.
Take Plinto.
Uh-huh, came the response.
You know, I only have 7 phantoms here, but I know now why Undigget parked his entire clan here. Plinto is having a field day.
I was in complete agreement with Stacy's last retort. In Crispa, when Plinto appeared in the town square, he became a murderous whirlwind, sending the enemy players to respawn in one hit. But those were run-of-the-mill level 200s back there, who represented barely a mouthful for the rogue. Here, however, as I already noticed, there were level 300 phantoms crawling out of every possible hole, and only one Plinto with a plus 45% buff. Gira, as the NPC officer was called, and her squad had already retreated from the phantoms, periodically shooting salvos at them from their crossbows, and the rogue was now on his own. though as far as I could see, this did not discomfort him much, and even to the opposite, simply gave him more space to practice his favorite craft. I could hardly keep track of what Plinto was doing. He wasn't even a whirlwind. He was... two greenish trails, gradually fading in the air behind the legendary daggers of my vampire, were the only visual indicators that met the eyes. Everything else was utterly blurry. There was simply no chance to single out any further details in this tornado. If someone had told me that a player can work at such a mad speed, I would have laughed in his face. But my own eyes weren't lying. A death machine had appeared before Altamita. 10, 20, 40, 50? As soon as the phantoms approached Plinto, they evaporated, to respawn in 24 hours. I was really beginning to like this Iluna's gift. Clan achievement gained. The best of the best. The highest level player in Malabar is in your clan. As long as this achievement belongs to your clan, the experience gained by all clan members is increased by 5%. "If your fighter keeps working at this rate, he'll burn out," said Gira, observing the dance of death that the vampire had put on. "Stop him. We certainly won't enter the castle today, so there's no point in wasting so much energy. Iluna's gift comes with a fee, and for this sentient, the price will already be enormous. Don't let him pay with his suffering. Stacy, we need to extract Plinto. He's gone berserk and can't hear us," I typed in the chat, as the constant healing and strengthening I was casting had decreased my energy by half. If I address her telepathically, I'll simply pass out. "Okay, the bubble's cooldown has just ended. I'll get him out now," wrote Anastaria. But in that very moment, Plinto performed an incredible feat. With one leap, he traversed almost 10 meters and landed right beside Gira's warriors, behind the cover of their bristled spears.
"I wouldn't call that berserk," he said in a self-satisfied voice,
and, leaping one more time, only now over the warriors' heads, landed beside me and Gira.
"Do you see that, boss? 72 phantoms in total, and almost half of my XP bar. I'm the best! For the first time in a decade, Hellfire is second!"
"I don't want to disappoint you, but I heard that there's a recovery period," I said, bringing my rogue back to Earth from his perch up in the clouds.
"Found something to scare me with," Plinto began to say,
but did not finish, for his eyes rolled back, and blood began to stream from his nose and mouth. His hit points began to plummet, and the rogue collapsed on the ground as though all his bones had been ripped out of him.
Okay.
The Avatar only bleeds when the scenario allows for it. I would guess that at the moment, Plinto cannot leave the game, and the system is making him feel all the joys of the recovery from the buff he had received.
"Stacy!"
I yelled, pouring all the healing I had into Plinto. Gira instantly issued an order to her fighters, and two of them grabbed Plinto under arm and began dragging him out of the blessed land. Damn, that's where the Azure Dragons were.
"Dan, get us out," croaked Anastaria,
like Plinto, crumpling to the ground. The only silver lining was that the girl hadn't lost her consciousness.
"You can leave the game only after recovering from Iluna's gift. Don't use it. She, too, must be extracted from the circle," said Gira, sending two other soldiers to Stacy.
By that point, we had already passed halfway through the blessed circle, steadily fighting off the oncoming phantoms, so we could allow ourselves the luxury of saving the wounded.
Come with us. You were healing too much. The recovery from Iluna's gift will impair you, too.
In the name of the Emperor, you are under arrest,
shouted a whiskered guard when we had almost reached normal ground. We were met at the very edge of the blessed land. The guard had already managed to grab Plinto, who remained unconscious. They pointed their spears at Anastaria and aimed a dozen crossbows at me.
You are hereby placed into custody for violating the border of Castle Urasai.
The guard went on, declaiming our sentence as if he were judge, jury, and executioner. However, being taken prisoner was not among my plans. Stacy was trying to say something, but could only emit a hoarse mutter. Plinto was lying prone, while Gira's men gradually pushed him past the border of blessed land with their feet, as if relief from the buff would come only on normal ground. All of this meant that I would have to deal with the situation myself. The only upside was that the immense mob of azure dragons standing beyond the blessed circle didn't dare do anything to us. Even if they shot their arrows and spells at us, not one would hit its mark, for the Barleona guards were intent on taking us to prison, and no one could get in their way. If someone did, they'd only find themselves in the neighboring cell.
By the right conferred upon me by the Emperor of Malabar, I am the rightful owner of this castle, I yelled, resisting the guard's efforts to twist my arms behind my back. I have permission to pass through the security cordon, both for myself and my companions, I pointed at Plinto and Stacy. And I therefore demand we be released immediately. And I request protection. I request protection for myself and my friends from any attempts on our lives by the free citizens currently surrounding my castle.
Please show me your pass, Earl, demanded the captain of the local garrison, approaching me. For you and your people.
Why, look at that. A second ago you wanted to twist my arms from their sockets, and now I'm an earl again. Why couldn't we just begin from here? Is it a religious thing? My pleasure. I offered him 3 green papers, which almost immediately dissolved in the captain's hands. At the same time, green markers appeared over Plinto's and Anastaria's heads in what seemed like a visual indication that they now had clearance to come and go as they pleased.
"You requested our protection, Earl," the captain went on as his men began to unbind Plinto and Anastaria. "It shall be provided. As of now, you and your companions are under the protection of my garrison. However, I would like you to bear in mind that I have my orders, and neither I nor my men may travel further than 50 meters from this castle. Also, keep in mind that we grant you protection as the owner of this castle. As soon as you cease to be its owner, I will no longer have the right to protect you from other free citizens. All the best. My healers will examine Plinto and Anastaria.
Buff available. Master of the House. Players do no damage to you in a radius of 500 meters from Altamita Castle. Duration, 62 days. Do you accept?
What a question!
Of course I do.
Does Plinto not require protection?
The captain asked with surprise when the wheezing rogue, who was still spitting up blood, began to stir. The vampire had been pushed past the boundary of blessed ground and was being attended to by healers, which meant that he was no longer in danger of having to respawn.
The choice is his, I replied philosophically, perfectly understanding Plinto's motives.
If every time he goes to the castle he has to suffer this, he'd prefer to have someone around to take it out on. By way of diversion, nothing else. Since the Azure Dragons declared war on us, why not engage in a little genocide? He did not fear an all-out assault. The guards were around and would get involved one way or another, and the strongest player in Malabar had little to fear from sucker punches. I'm certain that he'd even welcome them, since they'd merely grant him permission to exact vengeance. If we factor in that Plinto was generally unmanageable, I wouldn't envy whomever decided to test his luck on him.
"In that case, I will now leave you. Gira," the captain addressed my new acquaintance, "didn't I warn you that it's dangerous to enter the circle? Were you simply seeking your death, or are you perhaps the lucky carrier of the Mark of Death?"
"It is my duty, Captain. You know so yourself."
"And yet you are responsible not only for yourself, but your people as well. What is the sense in losing your head here and now? Do you wish to make the phantoms happy or something?"
The captain began dragging Gira away, while she resisted, and at this moment, an arrow flew straight into my face. More precisely, it should have flown into my face, since, thanks to my immunity from damage done by players, the arrow and I were actually in different dimensions, and all I felt was a whiff of air as it passed.
"Beldar! For an attempt on the castle's owner, you are hereby remanded to custody for 24 hours!
The guards yelled immediately, and twisting back the arms of the hapless marksman, sent him to Narlak. It looked like the Azure Dragons had decided to test the reliability of my buff. I'm curious. If they have NPC mercenaries, will my Master of the House buff remain effective, or will I have to defend myself? I wouldn't quite want to test this conjecture on my own hide. "Stacy, two general questions occurred to me." Acting as if nothing serious had just happened, and making a show of ignoring the players milling nearby, I approached the girl. Stacy looked like she had recovered a little from Iluna's gift, and could speak again.
"I'm listening."
"How did you two activate the ability, and why is it that neither you nor I received the experience that Plinto earned? We're in a single group together, after all, but his level is the only one that grew."
"At this very moment, I have only one answer to both questions. I don't know, and have to look into it. I can see that you haven't been affected by the recovery period. As for Plinto, where is he?"
"He signed off into reality as soon as he got the chance."
"I've never seen him move so fast before. He was darting among the phantoms as if he had become the wind, as if he was something weightless and impalpable. I suspect that the activation passes when the player exceeds his ordinary bounds and limits. I, for example, tried pretty hard, but definitely not with all my strength, trying to keep Plinto at least 60% hit points. Maybe this is why the recovery didn't make me lose consciousness."
"All right, no matter. I'll ask Gira about it. She seems to know something."
"Gira?"
"The NPC who's in charge of the squad we crashed into. It was her people who pulled you and Plinto out, so we'll have to speak to her anyway, if anything, to say thanks, and find out why she's so desperate to get into the castle, as well as how she intends on getting inside. However, the bit about why the group didn't get the experience is really curious to me. If you recall, in Beatwick, all of us received the experience. But here..."
"I'm looking into it now. Don owes me anyway, and I don't think that an answer to my question will violate any NDAs he's signed.
Dan, I'm going to sign out to reality too, okay? That recovery, if I'm honest, was a pretty hefty experience. It's been a long time since I've felt anything like that.
Okay, I shrugged. I'll see what I can learn here in the meantime. Have a nice rest.
I see you've broken through after all, said Dundigget, approaching me and regarding with me the row taking place between the captain and Gira. Judging by how the girl was flailing her arms, their argument was no joke. It was too bad that the NPCs had cast a muting dome over them that blocked all sound. I, for one, would have been very interested in hearing what they were saying.
As you see, I shrugged.
What do you want?
To make a deal. What else? Smirked the head of the Azure Dragons. As I understand it, this is the castle that the Emperor has granted you, and yet you have no one to actually capture it with. You could, of course, call in Phoenix, but that would be far too much for us. We don't intend on letting anyone else reach this place. Nor will Phoenix hazard a war over a place that belongs to you. They'd stand too much to lose. It follows that you find yourself in an unfavorable position. And yet, we are ready to accommodate you and grant your raiding party unrestricted passage to the Phantoms. There are plenty of them, so there should be enough XP for both clans.
How very generous of you. I couldn't restrain my sarcasm. And what are your conditions?
As long as the castle allows us to level up at an accelerated pace, you refrain from capturing it. That is, nominally, it belongs to you, but in fact, it belongs to all of us. We can set a further condition. If, in the next, say, 3 months, the situation doesn't change, we will depart.
Uh-huh.
By that point, the entire Azure Dragons clan will gain another 340 levels, and the XP from the Phantoms you slay won't have any effect anyway.
It's nice to see that we understand each other so well. Shall we make a deal?
What happens if I decline?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing good for you or your clan. Man, I like you quite a bit. But the reality here is such that we simply must keep our competitors away. The clan competition is in 3 months, so we will fight tooth and nail for any opportunity to take first place. If your clan stands in our way, we will scatter it aside without even considering the consequences. I repeat, we are prepared to allow you to enjoy the bonuses this castle offers, under only one condition. You make no attempt to capture it. If you don't agree, the war continues. And I strongly advise you against relying too much on that immunity from player damage that you got. Trust me, it's much easier to prohibit you from being here than to waste energy sending you to respawn.
You'd oppose the will of the Emperor? I raised an eyebrow in surprise.
Me? No. My clan? Neither. But Narlak is not directly under the Emperor's authority. It's an independent city of the Freelands, and the wills of the Emperor or the Dark Lord aren't binding. While you endeavor to prove that dogs don't climb trees, those 3 months will elapse.
Deal?
I need to discuss this with my clan, I replied, doing my best to keep my voice neutral. At this moment, I had no secret trump to play, aside from the Guardian's decision, so I had to speak with Stacy first. And Plinto, too, could offer some useful advice here. But I did know one thing for sure. I had no intention on agreeing to Undigget's demands, which meant that the Legends of Barleona remained at war with the Azure Dragons.
Perhaps it wasn't in the open yet, but it was inevitable. And somehow I wasn't particularly worried that there were only 133 of us, including gatherers, while the Azure Dragons had around 10,000 fighters at their disposal. I wasn't about to bend over.
"Discuss it. There's no rush. Will a day suffice?"
"I think it will. I'll be waiting for an answer in 24 hours. If it doesn't come, we'll assume that you've refused. And in that case, we will begin to take action."
"Captain, permit me to clarify an issue."
I addressed the leader of the garrison as soon as the head of the Azure Dragons had left.
"Earl?"
"Tell me, as the owner, may I forbid trespassers on my property? What do I need to do that?"
"You may. To do so, you will need permission from the Narlak Council. This territory falls under its jurisdiction. As soon as you obtain the decree, no free citizen will be allowed within 500 meters of the castle without your permission."
"Thank you. I will make the relevant inquiries. One more question. Who is Gera? As I understood it, she is not under your command, and she's clearly not a mercenary of the Azure Dragons, and..."
"I understand your question,"
the captain interrupted me.
"Gera is one of the survivors of the Glarnas garrison, which Urusai destroyed. She had been undergoing training with the Imperial troops, and when she heard about what had happened, she hurried here with the permission of the Council."
"Urusai? The name of the castle is Altamida," I corrected the captain.
"Perhaps, but my information says otherwise. In any case, the name is not important. If you wish to decide who is allowed in the vicinity of the castle, you will have to obtain permission from the Narlak Council. Please, excuse me, the Phantoms are beginning another attack."
"Okay. Undigit wouldn't be as confident as he is without good reason. If the Narlak Council is on the take from the Azure Dragons, then no one will be able to approach Altamita. The security cordon will immediately take the trespassers to prison. This means that the only thing that'll work is a massive assault, with the full recognition that the attackers will earn hatred with Narlak. Phoenix would not be okay with this. But I happen to know someone who might."
"Speaking,"
the familiar voice sounded in my amulet. "Evelet, this is Mayan. I won't beat around the bush and get straight to the point. If I need several thousand of your men for 3 months, will you be able to assist me?" Was the only response, so with a smile I went on. "Okay, let me provide you some more detail." I related to Anastaria's uncle the full and unvarnished story about the grinding opportunity I had discovered and about my conflict with the Azure Dragons. Unlike Phoenix, the Dark Legion had absolutely no interests in this city. In any case, the Malabar governor was in Narlak, and the mayor had made no mention of any Cartossian officials. If I find a way to exert pressure on the council, then Evelet and his people would come in very handy. I was confident that hatred with Narlak wouldn't dissuade him from dislodging Undigit from Altamida.
"What are your conditions?"
Evelet immediately latched onto an opportunity to level up his people. "I don't need any conflicts between our fighters. There's enough phantoms here for everyone. I need protection and the complete annihilation of all the players currently buzzing around my castle."
"Accepted. Anything else?"
"The phantoms may drop something pretty valuable. I see no point in asking you to show it to me or hand it over, so whatever loot the players drop is yours.
That's reasonable.
And another thing. I propose an alliance. I'm certain that the Emperor and the Dark Lord will like the idea. Two clans from opposing factions working together. Besides, I'll need experienced fighters for the Eye of the Dark Widow quest.
You haven't returned it yet?
Evelyn asked, betraying his curiosity. We agreed that we would do that quest together. I'm not going back on my word.
My lawyers will draw up a contract and send it to Leidy, Barsina, and Anastaria. Aren't they the ones in charge of your bureaucracy?
I see you are well informed about the inner workings of my clan. I couldn't help restrain a wry observation.
The world is full of rumor, Mayen.
Even through the amulet, I could sense that Evelyn was very satisfied with the impression he had made on me.
As soon as we sign the agreement, you can count on 3,000 fighters. Although my advice is that you try to strike some kind of deal with Narlak. The Azures are numerous, but I will invite some mercenaries, so we should be able to dislodge them. The guards, whatever their numbers, aren't a problem either, but I'd prefer not to ruin my relations with the city, so do your best to solve that issue. My people will be at your disposal once you guarantee that the guards won't attack them. We'll add that to the contract, too.
It's a deal. If I may ask an unrelated question, tell me, have you solved the Guernica's dagger quest yet?
Not yet. But it seems to me that we'll complete that quest in the next week or two. The dungeon's been located, and all that's left is 2 bosses, including the last one. So, it's in the bag. Any news from Phoenix? Have they killed their second boss?
Unfortunately, I don't know. They definitely found the dungeon, but about the bosses...
Okay, no matter. I'll ask Ekeler tonight. Is that it?
Yes, I think... Although, how are things over there in Cartus? Any regrets about the switch?
There's no time for regrets. New quests, new skills, new dungeons. It's like finding oneself in some novel fairy tale where every shrub conceals something miraculous and wondrous. This really is paradise for exploration, and my fighters remain in-game for weeks on end, trying to be the first in everything. By the way, I have an invitation to a ball in honor of the marriage of one of our counts with a girl from Malabar. The invitation is for 2. Do you want to bring Stacy with you in a week or 2 for a visit? You can check out our palace and compare it with the Imperial one. Trust me, it's worth taking the time out to do it. Naturally, I'd guarantee your safety.
Have you told Stacy already? I immediately countered.
Not yet. I was planning on inviting her at the beginning of next week, but since you called first...
I'm into it, then, but with one request. Don't tell her anything. I'd rather surprise her.
That works. Then let's summarize. I owe you a contract, and you owe me an arrangement with the local authorities that we may enter the area in question, as well as coordinates in case you need our assistance.
Agreed. In that case, I'll talk to you later. I'll go start working on the paperwork.
May I Sit here.
A pleasant female voice jolted me from my contemplation of being and the meaning of life. Try as hard as I might to invent some intelligent plan of action in regards to the Narlak Council, the result that came to mind always ended in the same thing. Raze the city to its foundations and forget about the Council as an entity. Have a seat, Gera. I waved my hand, inviting the girl. Tell me, how may I help you?
It seems to me that it is I who could help you,
the girl smiled, taking a seat on the ground.
No doubt you, as the new owner of Urasai, have some questions. I've come to answer them.
The castle is called Altamida, I said, but the girl's eyes revealed not even a spark of comprehension, so I added, but no matter. I already know the reason for why you want to destroy the phantoms, but I don't understand how you intend on entering the castle very well. The Emperor told me that only the owner may do so.
Perhaps he was speaking only about free citizens, since any one of my warriors may enter the castle freely. The only difficulty is to fight our way through.
Okay, let's leave that issue for later. Tell me, why do you want to get inside?
It is too late to bring back my relatives, but somewhere in that castle there must be an item that is causing the phantoms to respawn, and causing the castle to shift from location to location. I wish to destroy it.
This castle was cursed many centuries ago by the Dark Lord. This is why it shifts from place to place, and why the phantoms find no peace. There are no items in it.
There is no such power in all of Barleona, besides, perhaps, the Creator, that is capable of casting such a curse,
Gera replied, a little fanatically.
With time, the curse would have exhausted itself, which means it has some wellspring.
There is indeed a wellspring, I assured the girl. Inside that creation. I waved my hand in the direction of Altamida. There is a monster that has taken the phantoms captives. It is this monster that sends them forth, and it is he that is responsible for having the castle fall on top of Glarnas. It's not an item that must be destroyed. It's a monster. If you help me take care of him, your city will be avenged.
Are you sure?
Asked the girl incredulously. This is exactly what the Emperor and the Dark Lord told me, and I have no reason to distrust them, I replied, leaving myself a way out just in case.
In that case...
Gera hesitated for a moment, and then jumped to her feet and proclaimed,
Earl Mahan, I request that you accept my people and me into your service. So long as the monster inhabits Castle Urasai, our swords are yours to brandish as you will. Gira's squad, comprising 30 warriors, 5 priests, and 3 mages, wishes to join your clan until Altamida is captured. Do you accept?
What are the terms of your entry into my clan? Despite my wild desire to push the accept button, I decided to do my due diligence. Having prior, unfortunate experience hiring a work team, I was well aware that a free piece of cheese only appears in a mousetrap, and even then, only for the second mouse.
We will provide our own nourishment. We demand no salary, nor do we participate in your conflicts with free citizens,
Gera replied in a formal tone.
We help you only to destroy the monster in the castle and nothing more. There are no further obligations from you. All of the experience we earn shall be converted either to clan points or, if you so wish it, to points for upgrading the castle. All of the loot that we earn during our time working for you is split between us and you.
Is that all?
No. The death of every fighter is my responsibility exclusively, so I will pay the clan 10 to 50,000 gold, depending on the rank of the fallen, as compensation. If I die, the money will be transferred to you by the bank. I will take care of this issue this instant.
Why, this was simply unheard of.
I was overwhelmed with a feeling that something about this was off. Fairy tale presents like this from the developers simply don't happen. They just don't. And full stop.
What about leadership?
Your orders are my orders. I make no decisions on my own. My people and I shall perform all assignments related to destroying the monster inhabiting the castle without a single objection.
What will you do if the Emperor's and the Dark Lord's words about the monster turn out to be false?
Call on your Emperor to attest to the veracity of his words, and this issue will be resolved. If it turns out that there is no monster in the castle, it won't be your fault.
In that case, I accept you and your people into my service, I said, pushing the accept button, and unwittingly hunching my shoulders around my head in expectation of some explosion.
Clan achievement gained. Fairy tale mercenaries. Hire a squad of NPCs with no fewer than 30 members of level 200 or higher.
A fine time to spend our assets, responded Leidy. We've got no money as it is, and he's hiring NPCs. We'll be left to wander the world penniless.
What? You don't know our miser? I bet the NPCs paid extra just to join us.
Klutzer did not leave the turn of events without comment.
This is Mayan we're talking about. Why, you couldn't beg him for some snow in winter. Forget outlays on mercenaries.
We shall be ready by tomorrow morning, Gera assured me. The phantoms that were destroyed today won't yet be able to respawn by that time. If you have no need of me, I will go see to the repairs. Today's attack has worn down many of our items.
See to the repairs. I glanced at my items and grinned. Aside from the chain that I had never gotten around to repairing, all of my other equipment was in perfect condition. I don't even know how I'll increase my crafting skill. It was looking like I'd not get much use out of it after all. As for the 6 points I'd already sunk into it, why, that was small change. As they say, the first time doesn't count. The ringing of my amulet tore me away from the very serious activity of doing nothing. I saw no point in going to Narlak without Stacy, nor in leaving this safe zone around the castle, so I simply sat watching the guards duke it out with the phantoms, thinking about nothing at all. To my immense surprise, I was quite good at this.
"Speaking," I answered. "Man, this is Magdi. You asked me to call you when we reached the last boss of the Bloody Scythe dungeon. Well, we're here, and we've cleared out all the mobs, so he's all that's left. Do you want in or what?"
"Of course."
"In that case, I'll have the mages conjure you a portal, and we'll bring you over in a couple minutes. Signing off."
The Bloody Scythe dungeon. An utterly unexceptional level 190 dungeon, containing 3 bosses and a huge number of mobs. And one little detail. This dungeon contains the fragments of the Thracinians' history.
I saw no point in fighting through the entire dungeon with my raiders, but it was important to be there for the last boss in order to have a chance at recovering the shard. I needed to increase my reputation with the Thracinians. Doing so would benefit my clan. "So what do you want me to do?" I asked my raid leader as soon as I emerged from the portal. The entire raid group was bespattered with some green substance that was slowly flowing down their clothes, and yet, judging by their properties, posed no harm either to the players or their equipment. It was simply a rather unpleasant visual effect.
"Nothing complicated," Magdi began to explain, wiping the green slime from his face.
Noticing my unspoken question, he smiled and explained.
"We just finished clearing some carnivorous plants from a hallway. This is their sap. It's helpful, actually, because the boss assumes that we're flowers and doesn't attack us until we draw his attention. You should go dip yourself in that puddle of the stuff over there."
He gestured into some distance.
"It's not required, though. Just stand aside and heal a tank once or twice. You'll still get credit for completing the dungeon. I'm sending you an invite to the party now."
I had no desire to dip myself in the green sludge, so Magdi smirked and began to explain the tactics.
"The boss has three phases that alternate every minute. During the first, we spread ourselves out."
Listening to Magdi, I gained more and more respect for this person. In a calm voice, without any unnecessary emotions, he detailed the battle plan. To conduct a raid properly, each member has to know the tactics without relying on the raid leader's instruction. 6 or 12 hours of waiting to respawn was too steep a price to pay for being too lazy to read the documentation. At the moment, however, Magdi displayed no dissatisfaction with my lack of preparation and simply explained what had to be done. The battle with the giant praying mantis that was the final boss of the dungeon involved no difficulties. Magdi led the raid group effectively and accurately, compelling everyone either to stop doing damage at the moment when the boss began reflecting damage to the players, or focusing on the boss's minions, small bugs that would come bustling out of cracks in the walls, whenever it was necessary. Once the bugs reached the boss, they would heal him by 1%, so during that phase, the raid group's main objective was destroying all the little stuff. My slowing spirits came in handy here by possessing the bugs and slowing their movement by half. As a result, in a mere 15 minutes, an encouraging notification appeared before me.
"Clan achievement gained. The mantis prayers fall on deaf ears. The Legends of Barleona clan has completed the Dungeon of the Bloody Scythe. Rewards for completion, 100,000 gold, plus 7,500,000 clan points. This dungeon may be raided again in 7 days. The Legends of Barleona clan has reached clan level 2. Clan achievement gained. From the world by a thread. Gold dropped by mobs increased by 10%.
At last! The second level should see us surge in the overall clan rankings. Maybe we'll even number in the top 10,000 now.
Despite the enormous number of clans in Malabar, the majority of them had never passed the first level. The process of leveling up the clan was simply too tedious, and not everyone was up to the task of assembling 20 people for a dungeon raid. The boss dropped about 100,000 gold, an unusual alchemy recipe, as well as 5 items that Magdi instantly distributed among his players. A notification appeared that 3 players had signed an agreement with the clan about some equipment, but I couldn't care less about these details. I was interested in the shard.
"Is there anything from the Thracinians there?"
Magdi asked, approaching me and nodding at the small nave in the wall. There, on the ground, lay pieces of stone, which seemed to have been the fragments of a sculpture.
"Are those blue fellows really so concerned about some ordinary rocks?"
"They're not simply rocks," I replied. "Looks like a sculpture to me. I could be wrong, but perhaps rebuilding it will increase our reputation with them."
"Are you a sculptor?"
"No, but I know where to find one." "All right, let's take the rocks and get out of here. Can the mages cast a return portal?"
"No, only an entry portal. A return portal is only available from level 200 onwards and requires 3 mages to cast. I only have 1 here."
"Then listen." I told Magdi about Altamita and the grinding opportunities it offered. I also mentioned the conflict with the Azure Dragons. "So, do you think you all will be able to finish off a half-dead level 300 phantom?"
"I'd have to look into it," the raid leader replied. "The difference in levels is very great. Not one of my current tanks would be able to survive even 3 hits, even taking into account the buff you mentioned. But if we were to do this correctly..." "Okay, let's do it this way. I have 1 more dungeon in the vicinity. We'll complete it maybe tomorrow or the day after, and then head over to Altamita to give it a shot. If it works out, great. Then we'll register ourselves there. If it doesn't, I will get back to grinding other dungeons. That'll give us better results in the end."
"Agreed," I replied, shocked by such a thoughtful answer. No, I am really taking a liking to Magdi. He understands the appeal of grinding the phantoms very well, and yet insists on looking at the situation from multiple angles. Level 200 players would need a long time to defeat level 300 phantoms, and that's considering only normal phantoms. I'm sure that there's a spectrum of difficulty, just as in any other army of mobs. 100 sergeants, 12 lieutenants, and 1 general. It can't be otherwise, which means that Magdi has already assessed whether his boys could handle this job or not. It makes more sense to earn XP and gold for the clan than respawn after every battle with the phantoms.
"I have a teleport to Narlak. Want a lift?"
Magdi asked.
"This dungeon is not very well situated. It's practically on the border with Cortis. There's jungle all around, aggressive beasts, and it's a half-day's flight from the city."
"Okay." I agreed to the offer. I'd have to fly to Narlak either way, so why not now?
"There's 1 more thing. About my title. Barsina and I agreed that..."
"I am aware of your agreement," I interrupted my raid leader and opened my settings. To be honest, I had forgotten that Magdi only agreed to join the clan if we gave him the title of Baron. It's a good thing he reminded me.
"Earl Mahon, head of the Legends of Barleona, confers upon Magdi of Amir the title of Baron."
"Does that satisfy you?" I asked the happy raid leader, who had already, judging by the flashes of light, earned several achievements.
"Holy," said Magdi, and activated the portal. Tilting his head, he pointed majestically at the blazing circle. "My dear Earl, only after you."
Did I really just add another klutzer to my clan? Why, the 2 of them will drive me mad.
"Mahon, by decree of the Narlak City Council, you are under arrest."
Hardly had I emerged from the portal when a guard ran up to me and pointed his heavy spear at my chest.
"Excuse me? Is this a joke?"
"Magdi, by decree of the Narlak City Council, you are under arrest,"
the guard parroted, as another guard appeared beside the portal that Magdi was emerging from.
"Leander, by decree of the..."
Everyone, stay out of Narlak,
Magdi immediately wrote in the clan chat.
They're arresting us on the spot here.
Of our 47 raiders, only 6 had managed to enter Narlak, including myself, so I again rejoiced at the swift action of my first raid leader. I say first because I have no doubt that we would have many more raid parties. If we wish to profit from the dungeons, we would need more people.
Please explain to me the grounds for our arrest,
I addressed the commander of the guards.
Such is the decree of the council, he replied. In pursuance thereof, all members of the Legends of Barleona are to be immediately placed under guard until the conclusion of the investigation.
Investigation of what?
This I don't know. If within the next 24 hours, while you are under arrest, there are no further findings or conclusions, you will be issued a formal apology and compensated for any damages suffered. Such is the council's decree, which corresponds to all legal norms of Barleona.
I could hardly restrain my tongue from pointing out that such legal norms in Barleona are reserved only for those who have hatred relations with a city or province. But I kept quiet. I suspect that the more I protest, the longer I'll have to sit in the cell. There really was a law in Barleona allowing the authorities to put a player behind bars. Typically, this was for some infraction, but there were instances when it was done as a preventive measure, too. For example, if the player is rumored to be a murderer or PKer, then, if he enters a city, he may be incarcerated for 24 hours for preventative purposes. Afterwards, naturally, they'll apologize and pay him a penalty, in our case, hush money, and then they'll release us. But at the moment, I can already see Undigget coming to terms with the council members about the arrest of my players and me. No, this is really starting to take the cake. After all, am I an earl or some ordinary peasant? A player receiving a title was unprecedented, so there was a chance that the NPCs simply didn't know how to treat free citizens like us. Well, no big deal. Let me show them. After all, were all those lessons Clowder had given me on the etiquette, ethics, and other protocols for treating the aristocracy in vain? By the way, I wonder if the developers had already thought of foisting this castle on me back then, or had the idea occurred to them spontaneously. If even one guard lays hands on me or my people, I began to improvise, I shall proclaim this infringement on the honor and dignity of Earl Mahon throughout the entire empire. In that event, under the provisions concerning nobility promulgated by Carmandont himself, I shall be in my right to destroy any culpable sentient. Either you present me with the specific accusations along with the evidence of any legal infraction on my part, or I demand satisfaction for this attempt to humiliate a member of the aristocracy. If the city leadership wishes to ignore the time-honored laws of Barleona, let them dare. I demand an immediate session of the council to answer for this travesty. Guardian, please confirm my right to do so.
I confirm it. Earl Mahon's demands are just. The council shall be assembled.
All of Narlak fell silent, as if the sound had been turned off. All at once. Even my 5 fighters kept quiet, staring at me in astonishment. Neither the guards nor the players hurrying past us, many of whom had heard the guardian's voice for the first time in their lives, none of them made a single sound.
You continue to walk on a blade's edge, O shaman,
the guardian continued after several moments, and the central square of Narlak, where the portal had brought us, filled with a terrible roar as the players and ordinary NPCs began to deliberate among each other about this turn of events.
"No big deal. We'll make it," I muttered, watching the guards put away their spears and look among each other haplessly.
What lovely programming has gone into the imitators. No system errors, or blue screens of death, or other bugbears of the past. An undocumented event had happened, so now they just stand and wait for the algorithms to update.
"Please follow us, Earl,"
the commander of the guard said at last. I guess the system's been reset, and something interesting is about to happen.
"Until the council session ends, your people may move freely throughout the city. The council will meet in an hour."
"Magdy, tell your people to go ahead and teleport into the city. I suggest you head for the third dungeon. You've no business in the city at the moment, and perhaps this whole thing might end up costing us some money. By the way, one more piece of advice. I suggest that from now on, we take the portal one at a time to have time to appraise the situation and notify the rest if something is amiss. One or two players is no big loss." I smiled. The guard led me down a strange path. It turned out that the Council of the Nameless did not meet in the city's central square, but somewhere straight ahead, to the right, straight some more, to the left, straight to the left, one more left, through an alley, over an overturned cart, through a house. Unfortunately, I had no city map, so I trudged after the guard, not unlike a tourist, beholding the various sights of the city. Not that there were too many. Though, here or there, we'd come across a strange symbol marked on the walls of buildings, a four-leaf clover against a backdrop of a yellow sun. Either a rising one or a setting one, it was hard to tell. At the seventh such symbol, I finally asked the guards what this was all about. It turned out that all buildings marked with this symbol were inhabited by people from Astrum, the neighboring continent. A very long time ago, those buildings had been bought out and no longer belonged to the city. Moreover, the territory on which they were located was considered the sovereign territory of Astrum, and the Narlak Guard had no authority to interfere in the neighboring empire's affairs. So, that's how it was. I had better remember this. Such knowledge could come in handy one day. Stop! Why, I could check this now! Stopping beside one of the Astrum houses, I opened the mailbox and, paying no heed to the guard's disgruntled muttering, wrote a letter. "Calatea, how are you? Forgive me for troubling you over such a trifle, but I want to determine how limited the Harbingers are. If I'm not mistaken, they can teleport anywhere within their continent, or, as it states in the rules, throughout the territory of their continent. Thus, a question occurred to me. There are several buildings in Narlak that belong to Astrum. They belong to it both legally and physically, the ground thereon included. The coordinates of this wonder are 5543-2664 by 4471-1331. Although, to be more precise, the second coordinate is 4471-1332, since I'm standing right before the entrance. Question, can you teleport here? Or are shamans limited to only one continent after all? After all, this is technically Astrum. I'd like to emphasize again that I'm simply curious. Thank you, Shaman Mayan. Having sent the letter, I took several steps and froze with a stunning thought. I knew the solution to the ogre riddle. How had I not thought of it earlier? The lack of an entry field meant only one thing, that...
"Please forgive me, Earl,"
The guard commander interrupted my self-congratulation.
We must keep moving. The council will commence in 40 minutes, and we are not halfway there yet.
Not halfway? What are they, meeting outside of the city? In my reckoning, in the past 10 minutes, we had gone from the center of town to its very outskirts. If the larger part of our journey still lay ahead, I don't even know. Maybe the council meets in some secret cave? Who can understand these clandestine conspirators? The secret cave really turned out to be quite secret, in the sense that I haven't seen a more luxurious manor in my life. Even taking into account my custom of studying the ornamental details of the architecture in Amherst, the edifice I beheld after another half hour of walking was like an elephant in a pigsty. We really did leave Narlach, and walked, in my estimate, about a kilometer in the direction of the mountains that could be seen in the distance. To the right and to the left of us, I could periodically see immense buildings, or rather villas, monumental, with enormous windows and statues along their entire perimeter, with carefully manicured lawns, massive wrought iron gates, and a yellow brick driveway leading to the building. These haciendas all but shouted, "We are inhabited by enormous bags of money!" Were I in reality, I would have gladly acquired, or better, received as a gift, such a home, preferably outfitted with a retinue of servants, for I couldn't even fathom cleaning such a place on my own. Constantly craning my neck at the extravagant properties, I missed the moment when we stopped, and one of the guards rang the little bell. Realizing that I look a little dumb, like a rustic in the midst of a metropolis, I turned to look at our final destination, and, cursing, tried to pry my jaw from off the floor. My sight was confronted by the pinnacle of the local designer's craft, a hacienda of all haciendas, a house of houses, and, to put it briefly, a real, oh boy. By and large, it was analogous to the villas I had already seen. The same massive construction, windows, statues, yellow driveway, manicured lawns and shrubs. But still, this was something else. How beautiful it all was. Without even thinking about it, I turned on my video recorder. I had to send this to Stacy. She would appreciate seeing the residence of the local fat cats. Now I began to understand the players who would spend years on earning a reputation with the emperors of all the continents just for a chance to see their palaces. If an ordinary country estate can make such an impression, I can only imagine what goes on in the enormous palaces. I would have to thank Evelyn for inviting me to the Dark Lord's palace.
"Earl, please follow me,"
a prim butler told me without a shred of emotion, and indicated the manor with his hand. The guards did not enter with us, as if they hadn't the right to do so. They didn't even exchange a word with the servant who met me, but simply turned around and trudged back to Narlach in silence. How odd! And yet I encountered an even odder thing when I approached the building itself. 7 ornamented carriages, each of which was harnessed to 4 horses. However, what threw me off the most wasn't that the city rulers had been transported to the estate, whereas I, an earl, had been forced to walk the way like some unwelcome relative. That was no big deal. It happens, and I'm not too proud to shuffle my feet. No, I was thrown off by the sight of Undigget and Do Not Punic emerging from the last carriage in the train. What are these guys doing here? Players aren't allowed to rule cities.
Considering that you are here and not in Altamita, I assume you have declined my offer?
Undigget offered in passing, and did not as much as pause to hear my reply. Here, I really lost my nerve. I simply had no right to believe that Undigget was a myopic person who couldn't see past his own nose. He had Do Not Panic, after all. Therefore, everything that was going on was advantageous to the Azure Dragons, regardless of however the present scenario could turn out. It was time to give up my belief in baddies that would risk their lives and funds over a vague goal and start treating what was happening with the caution it deserved. The Azures knew something I did not, and were therefore confident even despite the Guardian. At the same time, Undigget was an experienced old wolf who had managed to become the leader of the third, and now, after the split, the second most powerful clan in Malabar. Thus, it followed that all my options for altering the situation had long since been calculated, evaluated, and sorted into their proper pigeonholes. "Damn, Stacy. How much longer before you return?" Chapter 9. Clan Maneuvers.
"Earl, please have a seat," said the butler, and pointed to a vacant seat. Not that there were any other chairs at all. I had been ushered into a fairly interesting place. A hall built in the form of an arena, only instead of rows of seats, the arena was rimmed with loges filled with plush pillows and cushions. In the center of this comfy amphitheater,